As a player, Charles Dillon Casey Stengel's contemporaries included Babe Ruth, Honus Wagner, and many others. He was the only person in history to wear the uniforms of all four New York teams, the Dodgers, Giants, Yankees, and the Mets. As a legendary manager, he formed indelible, complicated relationships with Yogi Berra, Joe DiMaggio, Mickey Mantle, and Billy Martin. For more than five decades, Stengel was the undisputed, quirky, hilarious, and beloved face of baseball. And along the way, he revolutionized the role of manager while winning a spectacular 10 pennants and 7 World Series championships. But for a man who spent much of his life in the limelight, an astounding 55 years in professional baseball, Stengel remains an enigma. Acclaimed New York Yankees historian and best-selling author Marty Appel digs into Stengel's quirks and foibles in his new biography, Casey Stengel, Baseball's Greatest Character. And it's a great pleasure to welcome the great Marty Appel to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me. Today's actually the on-sale date for the book, so it's an honor to be with you.
Yeah, there's no better way to celebrate the release than to have you with us. I've admired your work for a very long time, and this book is an absolute delight. It's fascinating. I alluded to this in the introduction, but here's a character, and that's a great word for him, but just a character that has been around for so long, and yet what you seem to find in the book is that we didn't know as much as perhaps we thought we did.
There was a lot to the man, but he was mostly all baseball. He had no hobbies. He didn't play golf. He didn't play cards. He didn't hunt and fish. It was all baseball, 365 days a year for him. And yet, he was a fascinating man. People loved being in his company.
What brought him to baseball in the first place? As you say, so much of his life was baseball. What brought Casey Stengel to the sport of baseball?
He played it in high school in Kansas City. He had an aptitude for it. There was a local minor league team there that signed him and sent him to a lower minor league club to begin. He started in 1910 in Kankakee, Illinois, and the team, their field was located next to an insane asylum, and the team's nickname was the Lunatics. So it was like a perfect start for what would be a kind of a crazed career for Casey.
And how would you characterize his potential at that point in the early days of him as a player?
It's funny. He got signed by the Brooklyn Dodgers, like in his third year in the minor leagues. The Dodgers scout said, well, I saw him play. He had some tools, but I always liked blonde hair, blue-eyed kids. They've got a lot of fight in them. So that was his ticket to the big leagues, and he started with the Brooklyn Dodgers. They were called the Superbas then, in 1912. And he wound up being a fairly decent player. He wasn't going to be a Hall of Famer, but he did play for 4 World Series teams. And he had some big moments, an inside-the-park home run in Yankee Stadium in the World Series, the first home run ever hit in Ebbets Field. So there were some memorable things he had going for him.
When you look at the time that he played on the field, and obviously the game is emerging. So when you think of his contributions to the game, and I mean, of course, because of longevity, what he saw throughout this incredible half a century, but what do you think that he saw and added to that evolution of the game of baseball?
Well, he lived through so many eras. He started in the dead ball era before home runs became popular. He wound up in what still feels like the modern era, even though his managing career with the Mets ended in 1965. He saw the integration of baseball and the integration of his team, the New York Yankees. That was probably the biggest development along the way. He saw expansion when the original 16 teams finally added on some others, which gave him the opportunity to go and manage the Mets, the startup team in the National League.
Let's talk about his managing style and what made him a good manager.
Having good players made him a good manager. And you could laugh and say, well, that would probably work for you and me too.
Right.
But he had a skill for knowing how to use the guys. He had a great memory for who did what against who back in April. So it was sort of an inherent genius he had on the baseball field, knowing what buttons to push. When he had bad teams, he wasn't successful. No big secrets to that. But when the Yankees hired him in 1949, his reputation was not very good. Nobody thought of him as a genius. And all he did was win five world championships in his first five seasons. That got his ticket to Cooperstown punched, for sure. And from then on, he was a baseball legend.
When you think of that legend and coming, you just mentioned, you know, of what his reputation was going in. As it went on and he punched his ticket, he was really universally loved, wasn't he? I'm sure he had enemies, but there was something about the guy that attracted many people to him and wanted to like him.
It was the strength of his personality, and even he admitted that he could make a living with his face. He had a great seasoned face with lots of wrinkles, and he'd wink, and he'd really win you over. And he spoke Stengelese, which was a beloved double talk when he wanted to avoid an answer or when he couldn't think of the answer. So he brought a lot of himself into the game, and in his personality was defined by these idiosyncrasies.
Those idiosyncrasies, talk a little bit about those and the people that you talked to and the research that you did of how they would manifest themselves and ultimately not only add to his character but add to his success both on and off the field.
Well, I guess the best and most famous example of the Stengelese was his testimony before a congressional Senate panel in 1958, when he was called upon to speak about why baseball should continue to receive exemption from antitrust regulations, which is more complicated than we need to get into now. But he handled it by answering the first question with this endless sentence that had no punctuation in it and essentially told the story of his life in a hard to decipher way, and yet at the end it kind of made sense. And when all the senators in the hearing room were laughing, and when Mickey Mantle followed him, Mickey just said, "Well, my answer's about the same as Casey's." It was a riotous moment at the usually austere Senate hearing room.
I mentioned in the introduction of you being a Yankees historian and doing so much work with the team. As far as it comes to the Casey Stengel years, how much did he reflect Yankees baseball and really make it what it is today, the legacy that he has?
Well, he was different than any manager they'd ever had before. The Yankees tended not to go for colorful players or managers who kind of stood out on their own. There was more of a corporate way to just approach the game and play it with great seriousness. So Casey broke those rules, and in doing so, gave the Yankees a personality, almost a fun idea, that had not existed before. And he still had to deal with very strong personalities like Joe DiMaggio, which was a test for him. Everybody wanted to see how he and the great DiMaggio could possibly coexist in case he managed to get through it.
And talk a little bit about that. How was he able to get through it and deal with not just DiMaggio, but these other very strong, let's face it, egos?
Right. Well, in DiMaggio's case, Casey drew a line in the sand, which seems kind of unnecessary if you have Joe DiMaggio on your team. But in his first day of his first spring training in 1949, he said the Yankee players were not allowed to go to the dog track at night down in St. Petersburg. It would be a violation of the new team rules. Well, everybody knew that's where DiMaggio went every night. So what would be? How would this unfold? And what happened was DiMaggio went every night, And when asked about it, Casey said, well, I have no firsthand knowledge of that. I wasn't there. So that was Casey's way of handling it, and that's how that test was met. But the two of them wound up coexisting fine. They always said good things about each other. Casey respected DiMaggio's place in the game. DiMaggio retired after 1951, so they only have 3 years together, and the Yankees won the World Series every year.
What was his relationship with the media? Because, he was around a lot, and people liked him, and they wanted him to be around. What was his relationship with it? Because he seemed to know what he was doing.
He loved entertaining the writers, and they loved being around him because he provided such interesting commentary. And also, he was so colorful to quote because he could talk about old-time players as well as the current players. I still laugh when I think about his first year with the Mets. Sandy Koufax pitched a no-hitter against the Mets. So the writers after the game, they wanted Casey's reaction. What do you think of Sandy Koufax? Is he possibly the best you've ever seen? And Casey, without missing a beat, just said, oh, no, that would be Grover Cleveland Alexander, who was a name from baseball's dinosaur years, who was pitching when Casey first broke in. So it was like in this one answer, Casey just reminded the writers how much baseball history he spanned.
Talk a little bit about what you use for your sources. I know that there were some documents that had not been around before, and even a memoir from his wife that helped you in this. Talk a little bit about the resources that helped paint this picture.
Yeah, that was a big thing. There was a fine Casey biography written about 30 years ago by my friend Bob Creamer, but that was before the Internet age, and Bob didn't have access to the digital files of all the different minor league and major league cities that Casey had played in or managed in. So that was a great source for me. But then the family gave me an unpublished memoir by Casey's wife, Edna, which talked about their lives together, their courtship, their marriage, which was stuff Casey himself never really talked about. That wasn't his style. He wasn't much of a romantic figure. Excuse me. So that simply gave us a flavor of Casey Stengel in this book that had never before been seen.
In that, what surprised you about him? I mean, you've been doing this beat a long time.
Some of the favorite things from Edna's manuscript. She said that he never really asked her to marry him. He just, strolling along with her one day, just blurted out, so, you want me to convert to Catholic or what? And that was his proposal.
Well, it's very sweet, isn't it?
Yeah, it was so romantic. And then it turns out he never gave her a gift, not on her birthday, not on Christmas. He just wasn't a gift giver, but he gave her every one of his paychecks to manage their finances and said, you just buy whatever you want, whatever you need. Because she said, well, Casey wasn't one to go into a department store and browse through lingerie. That was all going to be on me. So that was pretty interesting. You don't see too many marriages that work quite like that.
Absolutely. It's a fascinating, beautiful biography. It's entitled Casey Stengel, Baseball's Greatest Character. The book is out today. Marty Appel, a great pleasure. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me. Enjoyed it.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.